Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Josh Brown, I hear there's a video game, a new video game that isn't Trek to Yomi that we should talk about.
I can't wait to talk to you about Evil Dead the Game, Scott Ilford. I've been looking forward to this for so many months. Pre-ordered it, which is unheard of.
What did you get for pre-ordering? Did you get some skins?
You got some skins. You got, I don't know how familiar you are with the Evil Dead.
There is a book called The Necronomicon.
That is certainly correct.
Bruce Campbell?
That is certainly correct.
Chainsaw on an arm?
He is in this game at least five times, and you get some skins for pre-ordering, okay, which I really enjoyed. You get the S-Mart skin from Army of Darkness, among others, which is iconic.
One?
And it's the one I use. He is my main. The Army of Darkness Ash is my main. I should probably explain what this game is about for people
you should,
who
but
just
also,
don't.
Is there a button to push that lets him say that this is my boomstick?
Nobody will say it.
Okay, good.
He will, like, just randomly, you know, drop lines from the movies, like, you know, swallow my soul, swallow my soul, swallow this.
Just emo lyrics. He's the original Mike M.
Hail to the King, baby. All that good stuff. All of the lines that Duke Nukem appropriated
are
finally in this actual Evil Dead game.
It is about time. Now, yes, you can finally say what this game actually is, because I know so little about the Evil Dead.
Yes.
Not to break this podcast immediately.
Before we do break it, should we explain what the podcast is?
Well, we probably should. I'm Scott Ilford. You're Josh Brown. This is The Wind-Up, where we just kind of just argue or talk about whatever's going on in the gaming industry. It's a mix of whatever we're playing and whatever's happening. News-wise, now obviously the gaming industry is dead for the rest of this year. There's very little going on. In fact, the two major games that were scheduled for the end of 2022 have now been delayed. There's no more Starfield. There's no more Red Rum. I was going to say Redfall. There's no more rum either.
There is no more rum. There's so many times on this very podcast, Scott, where we've talked about, is this year over? And I've said, it's not over.
It is.
Starfield's coming out. And now it's not, and now I might agree that it is over.
I feel like I called it when Elden Ring came out. There was something about that period where everything was dropping in quick succession, whether it was Olly Olly World or Pokemon Arceus or whatever. And I just remember thinking, this is it. This is everything, because like development windows were so hampered by COVID that this is what they could manage, developers and studios managed to put together during those horrible remote years or whatever, various teams were figuring out how to operate, and this is what they did. And any projects that were started in the last 2 years are going to take a lot longer to come together.
Yes.
Hence why we're not getting anything about God of War. Maybe it'll be a surprise drop, but whatever. And I just feel like the year is done. And every new piece of news only corroborates that idea.
100%, you know, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild 2, or the sequel to that, got delayed till 2023. Yeah. Like you just said, Starfield has gone, Redfield has gone. God of War is almost certainly going to go, surely, if we haven't. I mean, it's almost June. If that thing's coming out at the end of this year, we need to get a look at that incredibly soon.
It's a bit mad that we're almost halfway through the year already. That
it really
is weird. Like,
well, yeah. I mean, yeah, 100%. You know, we had that kind of just mad month in February and then into March. Mm. And that's just kind of been us. We've been coasting on that energy for the past few months. But like you said at the start, a new video game alongside Trek to Yomi is out.
Yes.
And it might be Game of the Year. It's not really Game of the Year, but it's good. It's good, man. The Evil Dead the Game is this multiplayer title, though you can play it solo on some missions or against the AI.
Can you actually? Or are people just saying that? Because every time there's a squad-based anything, it really works as a single player. No, it doesn't. Never do.
You can, but it's not like a campaign. Don't go in expecting a campaign. Expect the multiplayer experience, but with bots. You know, it's not going to satisfy your single-player itch. There are single-player missions in there that take scenarios from the movies and and let you play them out, but you're still in the multiplayer sandbox. You're still, you know, using the multiplayer mechanics for the most part.
Okay, and the game, but the game itself is a very Friday the 13th style thing.
It's like a mix of Friday the 13th or Dead by Daylight. Uh-huh. If you mix that with something like Left 4 Dead. So you are a team of four human survivors. You have different classes like a leader or a warrior or a support class where you can heal, you know, and each one has their own individual strengths, whether it's a focus on melee attacks or a focus on ranged attacks and what have you. And essentially, you have to cooperate and you're going up against another human player or an AI who controls the Deadites, which are the monsters and creatures of the Evil Dead world. Okay. And they essentially work like a sort of puppet master, I suppose. So you don't have a corporeal form. Again, I'm not sure how much you know from Evil Dead, but like...
I watched Evil Dead and I really didn't like it. And then, that's why I said about breaking the podcast, because I don't actually rate Sam Raimi. I like the Spider-Man trilogy. Hated the new Doctor Strange. Carry on.
Let's get into that after this, because that will blow my head off. Yeah, so the person who plays as the demon plays as the kind of force from the movies, which is just essentially Sam Raimi's camera like tied to a bike, which goes around in like a formless wind
like
almost. Yeah. So if you're playing as the demon, you have to go around the map and you essentially like lay traps for the survivors and you can spawn in certain enemies. You can assume direct control of certain enemies or bosses to essentially try to halt their progress. But what differentiates it from something like Dead by Daylight is that the survivors obviously can fight back and are way more offensive. Like I said, you've got chainsaws for hands, you've got sawn-off shotguns. So there's a lot more action in it compared to something like Dead by Daylight. But it's just a really cool idea to use this for the Evil Dead IP. It fits quite well. Like the more focused action, you know, fits with the kind of manic, just like ridiculous action that's found in something like Evil Dead 2 or Army of Darkness. And it's like a fun, casual game, man. It's really scratched that itch for me.
That's good. I mean, because I played a little bit of the Evil Dead game on PS2
yes.
and did some of the chainsaw finishers and the shotgun stuff and just basic gameplay stuff. I thought that was fun enough. But how does this perform? Like, does it... Because it feels like it's weird when a game like this comes out with decent enough graphics and obviously a license and everything, there's an assumption or there's a hope that it'll run well.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like Friday the 13th, ran like absolute arse for a long time. And so does this hold up to just, you can jump into it and just play it?
Well, it's out on both current gen and last gen machines. I've been playing on the PlayStation 5, so I can only speak from that perspective. But on the PlayStation 5, for me, it's ran completely fine. You know, it's not like the frame rate has never tanked. I can consistently find matches, and the actual gameplay itself, you know, the core melee and weapon based combat is satisfying.
Right.
Yeah, it's a little bit janky, you know, it doesn't play like The Last of Us Part 2 or anything, but it's satisfying to, you know, pull off headshots, to, like I said, you know, hit those finishing moves with chainsaws or swords or whatever you can get your hands on. It's crunchy, it's gnarly, it's quite gory, and I'm actually surprised at how well it plays, like, from at a core game perspective. Like, if they added in something like a hard mode or even like a really dedicated single player game, I think it would still be recommendable, because the actual core of it is just kind of satisfying.
So you're going up against all, like, another player who's controlling all the Deadites, and they, I guess, they can access all sorts of different powers and stuff to keep you back. How do you just win by, like, eliminating, like, do they have tickets? Like, how do you actually get through it? Because one of the things I really liked about the Friday the 13th game was that there's different ways to beat Jason, or you can just escape, or you can summon, I think it's Tommy Jarvis in that lore, the guy that actually defeated Jason in the movies or something. So, like, are they doing deep cuts from the Evil Dead lore, or, like, how do you, does it feel like you're doing the same thing over and over again?
That's kind of the tragedy of it, because what they've got there is absolutely a start. Like, it's a good template, but each match, if you're playing as the survivors, you need to locate three parts of a map. And you know, the maps themselves are, like, huge, like the actual levels. So it's like this big sandbox. There are three, I think, and there are big sandboxes. But you need to locate three parts of a map. It'll tell you in the top right-hand corner which area you need to be looking for it in. So you collect those three maps. Then you do kind of like two wave, like, defense objectives to get two more objectives, and then you do the final objectives, which is kind of like taking out the evil and destroying the Necronomicon book. But it's the same thing every time, and that's kind of where it falls down a little bit, because it's really fun to run through all of that stuff, and the maps are varied and they're big, so you're not going through the exact same places. But I can kind of, I've only played it for like 4 or 5 hours, so my thoughts are quite incoherent on it at this moment in time. But it's been fun for now, but I do think they will have to add more.
Because if they mention that stuff, like obviously the Evil Dead is a massive IP, it feels like the kind of thing that everyone knows or at least has heard of. So do you think they'll like do like a season pass or do, even if it's not advertised as that, do some sort of thing for the rest of this year? I mean, they might as well.
They literally have a season pass that you can buy right now. I think they've announced 4 DLC packs. I don't know what's going to be in there. They have a free, it sounds like I'm like shilling for this game, which is not sponsored at all. This is just what I've been playing.
I do want to point out that I don't think either of us realized that it was out this week. I know you pre-ordered it like I think earlier in the week to get the bonus stuff.
Yeah.
But both of us didn't realize it was out because the marketing's been barely there. Like obviously the game was announced and talked about a little bit during, I guess, an E3 a few years ago or something.
Yeah.
But I didn't know it was coming out at all. And then even when it's out now, I didn't see anything across the weekend. And other than you talking about it, I've not seen a soul mention it.
Well, it's because it's such a strange property to adapt. Mm. And I guess this is where we can talk about The Evil Dead as a license at large.
Yes.
Because you look at something like Friday the 13th or the upcoming Texas Chainsaw Massacre name. And although Evil Dead is big in horror, like it's not the crossover hit that's something like the Friday the 13th is. You talk to any random person in the street and they'll be able to say, yes, Friday the 13th, slasher, Jason Voorhees. There are like these kind of bits of iconography that are known across, you know, different generations and different interests and what have you. Mm-hmm. With Evil Dead, it's so much more of a niche series, and the mythology of it is so much kind of less defined, I guess.
No, it's very true, because like when you, if you say like the average person, what do they know about the Evil Dead? Well, even I, and I am the average person in this regard, because I know the Evil Dead name, I know Bruce Campbell, but I know him as Bruce Campbell more than I know him as Ash Williams.
Right.
And like I know the kind of like the chainsaw hand and like the boomstick, I know some of the lines that have been memed and stuff. But yeah, other than the Necronomicon, like I didn't even, the Deadites, I didn't know what they were. Even though I've seen the movie, I'm just like, that's probably what's being summoned, I guess. Like, I don't know. And but yeah, like they don't have those sort of, they don't have those iconic visual elements that necessarily, other than like Ash's design with the chainsaw on the arm, but like enemy wise, I can't even tell you what a Deadeye looks like.
That's interesting, because this is the thing, this is why it's like so niche, because for fans, like there are those you know, archetypes, and there are those icons to draw from. Like there are three different Deadite types that you can play as, the puppeteer, the necromancer, and warlord, I think they're called. And they're all pulled from different movies or the TV show. So you can have the more modern demons from the TV show, or you can have Henrietta from Evil Dead 1. You know
what I mean?
So like there is a lot of attention to detail in the franchise in there. Mm. It's just that, you know, a lot of people, if they're not familiar with The Evil Dead, won't really appreciate that.
Right.
You know, they do recreate, like, the cabin from Evil Dead 2, for instance, or some of the locations from the TV show, and that's all in there to find.
Okay.
So for someone like me, who's a big Evil Dead fan, I'm going through the maps being like, that's sick, that's cool, that attention to detail is awesome, but I don't think it would necessarily translate if you're just, you're playing along for the ride. Like, I'm there for those added details.
Yeah, it's kind of cool though, because we got the Friday the 13th game, which I think a lot of people didn't expect to be any good, but like I said, mechanically it's quite, well, it's deep enough. Like, I wasn't expecting multiple ways to win, and like, when your player's chasing, the different powers that you have are really cool, and a different way that like sound works and all the hiding spots, and like I like that thing. And then we got the Predator game, which was like a bit of a misfire. If you like Predator enough, like I love Predator, so I was like, okay, I'll give that a shot, and played like a few hours of it, but I was like, I feel like I've seen it immediately.
Yeah,
but it's weird because now the Evil Dead is like another one of them. I know it's a different dev, but it feels like it's like they're nailing the iconography. The devs clearly care about the IP, and they're bringing in all this, these like recognizable elements and stuff. But like you said, it falls down on the repetitious side of it.
Yeah.
But you can have fun if you're an Evil Dead fan, like the same way you could if you were a Friday the 13th or a Predator fan.
100%. You know, I'm looking forward to finishing work and jumping into another match. You know, playing as the demon is a lot of fun. You can cause so much mischief by, you know, possessing cars. What my favorite thing to do,
possessing cars?
You can possess cars because, like I said, the maps are quite big. So some of the survivors sometimes jump in a vehicle to try and get to the next place.
That's great.
If you're the demon, you can possess that car. And what I like to do is possess the car and just drive it into like a bog somewhere. Like,
do they know it's been possessed?
They know it's being possessed. Oh. So like they'll like get thrown out of it, and then you can like drive it into a bog.
Oh, if I could possess it and they didn't know, and then they thought they were driving, and then it drove them into the lake or something. Give me that.
So you're still like, that's cool. There's also a fear mechanic. So if you spend too long on your own or too long in the dark away from light, you open yourself up to possession.
Right.
So if you're playing as the demon, you could possess one of the survivors and take control of them for a little bit.
Right.
And here is a top tip that someone did to me that absolutely infuriated me, but
okay,
it's excellent to do to grief other players. Mm-hmm. When you possess someone, just waste all our ammo, because ammo is so scarce. Just start shooting off and watch their great weapon slowly become useless because they'll have like two rounds left. Right. It's unbelievably satisfying to just grief someone like
that. That's great. So
there's stuff like that that's going to make it interesting in the long run, whether or not this game lives or dies. And I hope it lives, and I hope they add stuff to it, because what's there is interesting. I just hope it has legs to grow.
That side of it, the two things you've mentioned there, the car thing, the ammo thing, the possession stuff, is infinitely more interesting to me than four people go up against waves of enemies.
Yeah.
Because I guess that's going to be the thing that needs to be differentiable, the thing that should be front and center in the marketing. And maybe they're just going to hope that clips get out there on YouTube Shorts or whatever, like to get across like why it's different than just another wave-based survival game. And because I wasn't bothered at all until you just said that thing.
Right.
I want to possess some cars. Yeah. I want to drive some people off cliffs.
It's a lot of fun. Like, I don't usually play as the villains in these games. Right. I think it's too much responsibility. Sometimes I don't end up having fun. Oh, there's a lot of downtime, you know, where you're just kind of like searching for the heroes and you
like
just
evolve.
Like, yeah, totally. But with this, because it's so action-focused, like you're spawning in enemies all the time. Like you're constantly with the survivors trying to get one up on them, whether, like I said, that's laying traps or possessing a tree to try and hit them that they don't know.
See, that's great.
Is there. Like, there's a lot of mischief to be had, and I'm a big fan of mischief, Scott Telford. So for the first time ever, I've actually really enjoyed playing as the villain in one of these asymmetrical multiplayer games.
Well, that's the thing. Mischief's a really good word for it, because when you can be the villainous side of a game like this, but you can literally play with other players. That's why I love the idea of possessing the car without them knowing it, and then like them blaming their friend who's just supposed to save them all, and if you could hear their chat. Because like, I miss mischief in multiplayer games. Like, I was talking to someone the other day about like in Splinter Cell when you were playing as the spies, and you could grab the mercs in the headlock, and then the mic channel was open, so you'd be like, F you, and then you would just kill them, or whatever. And then like they would like, they brought that move in, I think it was in Chaos Theory, where the mercs could pin the spies down, and I think it was like a foot on their chest or whatever, and then the mic channel was open between the two of you, and you could swear at each other and do whatever before you get killed. And I was like, there's banter to that in like a fun way.
Yeah.
And I feel like, obviously those things went away because open mic channels just resulted in the worst people saying the worst things ever, but there was a side of that that was fun. And like, if you can mess with people like online, like I think that's what even Among Us, like, you know, the appeal of that is rooted in that idea. Evil Dead sounds cool. I guess it just needs more for the rest of this year in terms of gameplay stuff.
That's totally it. You know, if you're an Evil Dead fan, I would absolutely recommend it. Or if you're into stuff like Dead by Daylight and what have you, and this will become hopefully a completely solid recommendation if they manage to support it and don't let it die.
Right. Speaking of not letting things die, I'm going to do a really weird transition into Gibbon, Beyond the Trees. Now, you might have seen this. It was in the indie showcase that Nintendo did the other day. I think it was on Wednesday or Thursday afternoon, where they just showed off a bunch of different indie games that are coming to the Switch. And I love, my favorite thing in gaming, or one of, is when they show a trailer and they go, and it's available right now.
Yes.
And I'm like, well, I'll go and buy it right now. Like, I don't need to look at the reviews if something looks cool. And in this case, it was a game about a bunch of gibbons swinging around the trees. I was like, I'll play the Monkey Simulator game. That looks great. Gibbon Beyond the Trees is a really, really cool conservationist game about the fact that the gibbon population is incredibly endangered, you know, throughout the likes of Malaysia. And I forget the other locations that they mentioned, but the point is that there was a huge problem around the world with different locations being visited by people for social media reasons, i.e. a lot of poachers will go and kill, you know, various gibbons and take the babies so they can take photos with them on social media. And so the devs were like, we need to raise awareness of this. So they made the game to literally do that. So there's a bit more to it, but
could you raise awareness with me right now? What is a gibbon? please tell me what this animal is.
It's a monkey. Like, it's a
thought it was a bird. I don't know why I thought it was a bird.
That's brilliant. No, I'm going to show you a picture of a little gibbon.
Thank you. I will Google one now while
you're
talking.
You just Google the word gibbon. Gibbons, the thing is, once you start looking into the fact that the population is very small, that they are endangered, you'll kind of realize that you've not seen many gibbons do much stuff. They're very rarely in Planet Earth or various wildlife documentaries because their numbers are so small. And they're awesome. Like, they swing at incredibly high speeds. They run really hilariously. They're brilliant. I love gibbons. I love animals. It's awesome. And so that was the whole thing. So the whole reason behind this game is to, like, you know, like I said, raise awareness of the fact that what's going on with them is horrific, and that so many people will go to these locations, these countries, to do photo opportunities with baby gibbons. And so for whatever reason, the poachers just get rid of the parents, take the baby, put them in a cage or whatever. So the gibbon game, the gibbon game is literally like putting a story to that and giving you a set of swinging mechanics. It's a very basic game. You either hold the right trigger. It's on Switch. I think it might be on other platforms too, but I was on Switch. You hold the right trigger if you want to swing. You let go to jump, and then you hold the left trigger if you want to run or slide down something, and you let go again to jump. So you're just chaining stuff together, and it's just the actual swinging mechanics have a nice momentum to them. And if you let go at the right time with the swing button, when you're coming off like a branch or whatever, you'll fly further forward. And eventually you learn how to do a backflip, and it's like you kind of just chain things together. But the game's really short. It's only like about an hour and a half long in total. You sort of play two different characters, if you class them as characters, two different Gibbons, whilst you sort of swing through. It's all side-scrolly thing. And as you sort of swing through the forests, it's you like, you know, you see you swing into a part that's been completely deforested, or you swing into a part that's been burnt down, or you then you swing into the tourist resort and you realize they're telling a very obvious visual story. But they do tie in the sort of family aspect where you're playing as the female Gibbon and the male and the baby are like ahead of you. And then things happen with them that you can probably guess. But it does a little swerve with what happens with the baby Gibbon. Okay. But it's like they do little bits and pieces where they're telling this quite obvious, quote unquote, obvious story, but backed by the fact that they are linking you to all these different charities, just saying, look, this is happening, like we're narrativizing this to get the message across, but it's a worthwhile message to put out there. And I think the game, it does it well enough, like for an hour to an hour and a half long, with a nice sort of chill swinging mechanics that are then obviously interrupted by horrific realities of what's happening to the Gibbons themselves. I think it works. And like the only downside is that on Switch it runs like hell.
Oh no.
The frame rate is abysmal in places. And it for some reason takes about 2 minutes to load. Like it's ludicrous. I have to imagine that the team that are putting it together, and I forget their name, just aren't that optimized with video game development. Obviously, the reason behind its creation has come from the reality of what's happening around the world. And so things like platform optimization are not on their on their priority list. But at the same time, oh my God, like it's a long... I thought my Switch was... I had to keep resetting it, going like, why isn't it loading? And eventually it got there. So yeah, Gibbon's a very nice little game. It's called Gibbon Beyond the Trees. I think if you just like playing as a monkey...
Which I do.
Could be an ape, to be honest. I could be getting it wrong, but it's a Gibbon.
It's a Gibbon.
And a little cheeky Gibbon. And I think it's worth checking out. I just think that it's a nice sort of hour to an hour and a half long. And like I said, definitely... achieved its goal with me. Like, I'm way more aware of what's going on with the Gibbon population than I was before. And now you know what a Gibbon is.
I do. You've honestly sold it to me probably more than you've ever sold me any game right now. Like, sounds
Shovel
amazing.
Shovel Knight, get rid of it.
Get rid of it. In the bin. Ori, in the bin.
Yeah.
Like this, and like you said, an hour and a half, just like straight through, straightforward story. Sign me up.
I know.
Brother.
The thing is that I feel like in an age of massive bloated 80 to 500 hour games, being told that you can actually just play something and see it all through and it'll be done in an afternoon is a godsend.
Absolutely.
And it's just like, give me more of them. I don't need every single game to be that small, but I appreciate small, tight, like, you know, memorable video games with great art styles in this case.
Not to like slag off some other video games, but like something like this that obviously has an incredibly straightforward purpose that it wears on its sleeve. Like, just a reason and a drive to it. You know, like, this game is about this. This is what every decision has been informing. Here you go. That's an hour and a half. That's 2 hours of your time. Like, enjoy it. Just take it in.
The only thing I think might wear on some people, and like, I love monkeys and chimps and animals, so I was easy enough just going, I'm just playing as a Gibbon swinging around. It's more than enough for me. But like I said, that is literally all you are doing. You are going left to right, swinging. There are different sonic style. There are different charts through the levels themselves. But you have no control over yourself other than run, swing, jump, slide. You can't just push the analog stick in a direction. You are always moving. So one of the other levels that comes in later is trying to free other animals from some of the tourist spots and stuff. And even, you know, your Gibbon will just jump over the, like, there's no way to really finesse it. So it's like, that stuff's a little bit finicky. But like I said, it as a way of just getting literally it's made to raise awareness.
Yeah.
I think the mechanics are a bit of a bonus. I would be recommending it on the game side. I think it's a chill game to swing around with some Gibbons and stuff. And there are some occasionally really cool vistas and really cool pieces of art that they've put together. Like when you do a really big jump and the sun's behind you, or the mountains are behind you, or the jungles are behind you, that stuff's cool. But yeah, as one of the games that was one of the two games or three games that released during that indie showcase, I picked that up. I didn't pick up Mini Motorways, which was like 15 or £18 or something.
That's outrageous.
For like an app game from like 3 years ago. I was like, I really want to play this, but I'm not going to give you that much money.
What I love about the two games that we have been playing over the weekend is that they are both like me and you games. Like you would just be satisfied playing as a Gibbon. I would be just satisfied walking around the cabin in Evil Dead as Ash from
There's
Evil
a bit.
Dead. And that's all it would have needed.
All I needed in the Gibbon game was to run along the floor going like, ooh, ah, and the arms go up. And I was just doing that. I was like, give me that. And yeah, you can just hold the left trigger and just sort of do the little monkey walk. I'm doing the monkey walk as I record this through a village and have all the villagers just sort of look at you, run past, and you take to the skies and you swing off the telephone cables and you're away.
God damn, that's game of the year, man.
It might be. It's definitely message of the year. It's definitely most essential game of the year. The only other thing that I played a little bit of, because I was listening to Batman Unburied, which is the Spotify podcast. We're not sponsored by that at all. although, when I was listening to it, I can't remember if we actually were sponsored by Batman Unburied, but it would have been a few years ago.
Were we?
I just feel like we did something on it. I don't know, to be honest.
I don't know.
If we were, then we're sponsored. I love it anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But but yeah, Batman Unburied, I was listening to that, and then I was in such a Batman mood that I was like, I'm going to go and play the one DLC that people talk about in regards to Arkham that I haven't played, which is Batman Arkham Origins Cold Cold Heart DLC. Which in the timeline, the Arkham timeline, is the debut of Mr. Freeze, where he just comes and crashes like this ball that's happening at the Wayne Manor. And then it's just all about figuring out who he is, what's going on with Nora.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
And all that kind of stuff. So I've only done the first couple hours of that. But obviously, it's almost been a decade since Arkham Origins.
Yes.
And it's been 7 years since Arkham Knight. So it was quite nice going back to those games.
I like that you saw the Gotham Knights trailer and thought, you know what? I want a bit of Arkham Origins. I want a bit of the cold, happy.
Honestly, Gotham Knights made me want to run out the room. Like, that thing looks horrendous. It was entirely because of Batman Unburied, where I was like, this lore is so cool. I love these characters. I love what they're doing. Batman Unburied, I feel, is going to be a bit divisive, but I love that, the setup and the tone. Yeah.
Well, please tell me more about this DLC, because I've not played it. You know, I've obviously played Arkham Origins and the other Arkham games, but the DLC for a lot of those titles is not something I am necessarily familiar with. But I know a lot of it has, you know, really high review scores, especially this one. So please tell me what this does different from the base game and why people should revisit it if they haven't played it.
I wish I could, but I've only played the first hour and a half or so.
Scott.
So I would say that it's incredibly atmospheric. I like the fact that it starts with Wayne Manor being almost burned to the ground. So you've got a lot of stuff where you're just playing as Bruce. I like that you sort of just get to deck a bunch of thugs as Bruce.
Nice.
And then go and put your suit on. And they tease the thing that I've seen in a lot of the artwork. Again, I'm going back 10 years, but they always showed off. It's called like the environmental or the extreme environment suit, where it's like a big bulky. It looks like what Batman wears in Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah.
When he fights Superman, he has that big sort of like giant kettle suit on, which he has on in the movie and stuff. But yeah, he teases that he's going to wear that, but he can't. He has to wear the regular bat suit. And Alfred's like, we'll come back to that later, sir, and whatever. But yeah, I just love Mr. Freeze as my favorite Batman villain. So I was like, why have I not played this earlier? But yeah, it's a nice story-driven thing. I'm assuming that the world will open up soon enough. And so, yeah, I just need to play a lot more of it. I feel that the Batman Arkham games are missing from my life. And I keep wanting to go back to Arkham Knight because that was the one that was received sort of the most middling. But there's not a 60 frames a second patch. There's not even variable refresh rate support for it, which is worth pointing out that Arkham Origins on Series X does run faster than 30. It does trigger the VRR setting automatically, and it runs faster than 30. My TV's trying to tell me it's 120 frames a second, which is a lie. and I'm pretty sure it's not 4K either. I think that's just the TV reading what the Series X is putting out rather than the game it's displaying or whatever. But it feels faster than 30. So if you want to go back to Arkham Origins and you have the disc because you can't buy it digitally, then I would recommend it if you have a Series X.
Why isn't WB doing more with that series? Like, not only the main Arkham trilogy, which I know you can get on, like, PlayStation 4 as part of the bundle, but, like, Origins, especially, like you mentioned there, has just been left out. Like, totally. They just forgot about that. But it's such a worthwhile addition to that franchise, especially for a lot of people who might not have played it because it's a stopgap release. Like, just throw it in the bundle.
Like,
Arkham is more than just the trilogy, for as much as I love that. Like, this is a game that exists. Don't pretend it doesn't.
It's weird because, like, I remember when Ewan was still here, Ewan Patterson over on ScreenRant.com, when he used to work for us, and he loved Arkham Origins. He was, like, loving, like, the sort of themes that it tackles, all the younger Bruce stuff, him figuring out how to be Batman, the fact that he's more brutal and he's, like, snapping necks and breaking arms and everything, and, like finessing how to be Batman, which is true. It's really furtive territory for Batman, and I think that, like, they do that side of him really well. Like, he feels like a more aggressive version of that character. And obviously, Troy Baker's Joker I always really like. I get that it's a Mark Hamill adjacent performance, but I feel like Baker gives it a bit more energy. His voice is a bit cleaner, and he can go a bit higher than Mark Hamill can. And I just feel like that's like a younger, more maniacal Joker who in himself is like realizing what Batman brings to his life. Which is one of the best scenes in Arkham game history, where you play through the thought process of Joker realizing he's like essentially in love with Batman. He needs this guy. It completes him. And we barely talk about that when we talk about Arkham games because it's in Origins. But yeah, like to bring it back to what you said about WB, it's dumb that they haven't patched these games. Like, it's stupid. Like, why can't I play 60 frames a second versions of the Arkham trilogy? They just don't exist. Even if you bought Return to Arkham, it's still 30. Like, it's so stupid.
Like, those games are so seminal and they still hold up so well. I just think they deserve more love. I don't know what WB's you know, what their priorities are right now, but I always feel like that kind of added attention to detail, that added love, just hasn't necessarily been there with them. Like, when they released Arkham Knight, for instance, on the PC, and it was broken.
Yeah.
Like, they made it clear.
They had to apologize for it?
Yeah, 100%. And even then, though, they made it clear that they were prioritizing the DLC over actually fixing that version.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's always been the thing that's missing. It's not the developer's fault, I don't think, by any means.
No.
It's just the kind of care for their back catalog and showing it the respect that it probably needs, especially when you could open that entire franchise out to a complete new audience if you just give it like that slight next-gen push.
Arkham Knight is on the PlayStation Plus collection, but it's 30 frames a second, 1080p. Like,
admittedly,
what are we doing?
So is bloody Bloodborne.
Yeah.
Like, get some patches out, please.
There's some stuff that is screaming for the most bare... Oh, it doesn't even need to do that much tinkering with it. Just let it take advantage of the stuff that is now baked into the PS5 or the Series X. Because we have variable refresh rate stuff. Like, I get that there's going to be some things that are hard-coded, but just, it doesn't feel that hard to free up a frame rate. Even if you go up to 40 or 45, it's going to feel better than 30. Like,
you'd hope so.
I never used to be a frame rate snob, but now that I'm here, I see it. I can't unsee it. And when I go back to stuff that's 30, it feels horrible. And so, yeah, like, I was looking forward to checking out Arkham Origins and hoping that it would feel better. And when I saw the, it's called Instant Game Response on the LG TV, kicked in to let it recognize that it's going to be faffing with the frame rate, and it plays well enough, and it plays nicely. And so, yeah, just 2022, go play Arkham Origins. You've got, there's nothing else to play. We'll end with a couple of news bits and bobs, because there's a whole conversation doing the rounds about Bloober Team, because they are assigned to the Silent Hill 2 remake, which go over to YouTube, or wait long enough and the news audio will be on this feed, or go across to the What Culture Gaming YouTube. You can watch the news that me and Josh shot this morning on the state of the Silent Hill leaks, which is to say that there is a mainline Silent Hill game coming and a remake of Silent Hill 2, and Bloober Team, makers of Layers of Fear, and The Medium and Blair Witch and Observer, are attached to the remake of Silent Hill 2. But the reception to that has not been very positive. A lot of people, I couldn't even find a positive comment,
right,
in amongst the various Twitter threads of people saying that they really didn't like Bloober Team, whereas me and you are fans, and I don't know where this came from, that Bloober are not awesome.
Nor do I. I mean, like you all know listening to this, if you've listened to the wind-up for long enough, Scott and I rarely agree 100% on anything. So the fact that we both
sugar
like...
Sugar and coffee? No. Not for you, anyway.
So the fact that we both like Bloober Team, yeah, you know, for me, I just assumed that meant everyone liked it. You know, we have this little echo chamber, I guess, in this podcast and in What Culture Gaming. Mm. And then I was looking at the response thinking, why are these not a good team? I know they're not like a Naughty Dog or a Sucker Punch or a whoever, you know, they're not at that top level, but they've proven their horror metal. They've made good horror games. Mm-hmm. Why can't they have a stab at Silent Hill, especially when it's a remake, you know?
Well, plus, I mean, we mentioned this in the video, the news video, but, like, they did The Medium, which is the most Silent Hill-ass Silent Hill game that isn't Silent Hill.
Totally.
So, like, you might as well take that tech, take the... I mean, that whole game felt like a love letter to old-school corridor-crawly isometric horror anyway, so give them the IP and let them run with it. I do wonder if the cynical business side of me just thinks that it was given to them because it's Konami pulling the strings or paying for the purse strings, and they gave it to them because Bloober would be a cheaper get than a Sony first party team. Even though the remake is apparently Sony timed PS5 exclusive. So I guess we'll see how that stuff comes together. But yeah, Bloober overall are an interesting team. I think that they've always... I like the fact that they have such a variety of projects. And like Observer, I really love as like a really cool sci-fi, synth-wavy, Blade Runner-y detective story with Rutger Hauer as well.
Yeah. And I think they've, you know, been building over the years. You look back at something like the first Layers of Fear, which I still like, but it is somewhat rudimentary in terms of its presentation execution of its ideas. But if you go from game to game, even Layers of Fear 1 to Layers of Fear 2, into Blair Witch, into The Medium especially, which I think was a big step up.
The Medium might be their best thing.
Totally. Yeah. You can see them growing and evolving as developers. And by now, I just think they've got so much under their belt. They've got so much experience and knowledge and expertise under their belt. Again, I'm not sponsored by Bloober Team. At this moment in time.
You're not blonsered.
I'm certainly not. But like they've been growing so much. I think they're at the position where why not give them a stab at something like Silent Hill? Give them an established franchise because they've been doing their own original thing and doing it pretty well for like the past decade, if not longer.
Speaking of original things, you were looking into something that Bloober had in the works that got cancelled. They had possibly the coolest sounding video game premise that we'll just never get to play.
Absolutely.
In amongst all the other things that they did manage to get off the ground. Like the Layers of Fear, like the Blair Witches or whatever. But yeah, they had this other thing that you were looking at.
Yes, 100%. This was reported on around the same time. But the idea was that they had this Aliens game in development that was set in the medieval times.
Right.
I think it was going to be a first-person game where essentially, because it was the medieval times, like they viewed the Xenomorph as like this deity. This god.
Right.
But then that was cancelled when the Fox-Disney deal went through, according to the report I was reading. I was thinking the other night, I can't remember what I was watching. I might be watching a YouTube video on Aliens versus Predator.
Of course.
I was just thinking like why haven't there been more Aliens games? Like why haven't there been more good ones? Why isn't there an Alien Isolation?
Isolation 2? Was 8 years ago.
Absolutely. And there have been some fine ones in between then, like one or two. But like why do these games just keep getting cancelled or like shunted or whatever?
Well, I can't think what the name of the one was where it was gonna be like Mass Effect Alien style, where you made your Space Marine.
Mass Effect, no, Alien Crucible, which was Obsidian, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. So like that was another one where like that was really promising. That was the one that seemed like it was going to be at the Game Awards, and Jeff Keighley himself was tweeting about it, and then it wasn't. And I remember on the live show, he was like, oh, you guys all think you know what's coming next, but actually it's something else. Then he pivoted into something else. And I was like, Jeff, we actually wanted that, mate. Can you get back, get on the blower and tell them that we actually wanted the Alien game? Because then Crucible never came together.
No.
And so, yeah, like, you know, the Alien property feels like it could be used a lot better. Predator as well feels like it's, like I mentioned Concrete Jungle before, but that should be an easy thing to get right. I mean, absolutely. The amount of traversal systems that we can do today feels like you should be able to do a good Predator game. Shout out to Concrete Jungle, though. I always love that game.
And funnily enough, yes. I actually remember the reason I was thinking of Aliens versus Predator the game, and that's because Evil Dead the game, it's very much Aliens versus Predator in terms of its quality. It's like a cool little thing that if you're a fan of, you'll probably enjoy like a nice 7 out of 10 time. I was obsessed with Aliens versus Predator as well,
the 360,
Scott.
The 360 game.
Absolutely, oh, hell yeah. The 360 one. Yeah. I pre-ordered that, was looking forward to it as well. And was it amazing? No. Was it good though? Yes.
I feel like, and if I did this every week, I could make this a weekly segment. But for now, my backwards compatible shout out of the week is going to go to Aliens versus Predator.
Yes.
Get the Xbox 360 version, bang that in a Series X system, and it plays incredibly well. No loading times, beautiful auto HDR, makes the lighting look incredible in the first person merc segments. It's great.
You are whispering sweet nothings into my ear.
Is there any other kind?
There are none, but I would agree, man. Like, that was a good game. Like, even though it was a bit janky, I have some of my most favorite multiplayer memories.
Oh, man, the bit when you play as the Xeno and you're, like, inside it being experimented on, you can hit the button to jump onto the roof.
Yes.
And you're just waiting, and all the different scientists come in, and it's all stealthy, and you can kill them and hang them from the roof with the tail.
Incredible. There's good also times. That multiplayer mode where you start as, like, there's, like, one Xenomorph, and every time you kill one of the Marines, they join the Xenomorphs team, so suddenly, like, you're losing dudes, and then you're fighting more Xenomorphs in, like, there's this one cool temple level where, like, the actual temple itself shifts around in, like, getting caught on the wrong side of a wall and then suddenly having like five Xenomorphs coming after you. It was awesome. Like, there's so much potential there.
I miss old school. We should do a whole podcast on this. I miss old school multiplayer map design
because
I miss Unreal Tournament's design. I miss, like I said, like Quake and old school stuff. The Star Wars Jedi Jedi Academy or Jedi Outcast, the way that they would do their multiplayer, those modes, those maps rather, were brilliant as well. But yeah, the AVP stuff, I think if you just took that multiplayer mode and just severed it, make it free to play, I don't care. Give me all the skins that were in Concrete Jungle.
Yes.
Find a way to monetize that thing. And just start on a Concrete Jungle. The one that they did that was like Friday the 13th. It was the Predator game. Maybe that is Concrete. No, it's not Concrete Jungle.
Wait, what?
Hunting Grounds.
That's it. Predator. Yes. Oh, you mean Predator Hunting? Yeah, of course.
But either way, find some way to bring AVP back as a platform. We'll all love it because those like diametrically opposed multiplayer modes are awesome anyway. And it would be sweet. But yeah, the Alien thing sounds like the best idea that we're never going to get to play. And Blooper Team, well, hopefully they can bring the Silent Hill 2 remake together. The final thing to talk about, though, is the Gears of War, almost like the Master Chief Collection, the Marcus Fenix Collection, which is apparently in production, according to VGC, Video Game Chronicle, saying that, and this goes back a few years in terms of leaks and stuff, but apparently coming this year, according to VGC's write-up, is a Gears of War collection in the vein of the Master Chief Collection, which I have to assume means that you'll be able to take levels from any of the main Gears trilogy, maybe they'll include Judgment as well, and then let you run them through in whatever order you want, maybe make custom playlists of different levels, or it'll just be all three games from one launcher. That would be the most boring thing to do, but I hope they do what is the best feature of the MCC, which is like, you know, give me a custom playlist called set pieces, and then give me every set piece in Halo in a row. Like, that's really cool.
I can't believe this hasn't happened already. I know we got the remastered version of the original game.
Ultimate Edition.
But yeah, the Ultimate Edition, but like, I thought this would have happened a few years ago. And I'm so excited for it. I replayed all the games when I went after Gears 5 dropped, and it was such a great time.
Right.
And if they can go back to those games, which still hold up like so well to this day, like you said, you know, synergize a lot of them when it comes to the multiplayer, and then just give them, you know, a bit of spit shine.
I do wonder,
remake a few things.
Considering how much Gears 2 and 3, like, didn't necessarily evolve the formula, but, like, you know, it took until, what, Gears 5 before you can reliably jump over cover while you go at it. Like, every other one just makes you tuck under and then jump over. But Gears 3 and 2 and 3 brought in all the finishers and, like, all the different ways that you can just paste enemies into the ground, which are, when I went back to Gears 1, are missing. And you, for me, I feel like they're missing. Like, I want to do cool finishers on the final. That, you know the thing that I missed? This is a complete side tangent. I miss being able to do a cool move on the last enemy in a group. Because that's the thing that was everywhere for a while.
Yeah.
And then it's just not there anymore. I want to run up to the final lad and do a cool finisher.
Surely there's games where you can do that.
Name me one from the last 10 years.
I'm really struggling.
It goes away.
Yeah,
We've got a video coming up on the coolest video game mechanics that no one talks about. And I made a whole thing in there about what happened to style in games. Let me be stylish in a game. Which is why I love Trek to Yomi so much, because it lets me do cool finishes. I want to behead the last guy in a room. That's all I'm saying. Just let me do a cool thing. But yeah, in regards to Gears of War, also included in this report is the fact that the Coalition, the devs, have started work on Gears 6. But I feel like, and this we'll wind each other up on this.
We will.
I don't think the Gears of War IP is dead, but I don't really think it's alive either.
I think you've not had your coffee this morning,
you're
Scott
very true.
Ilford, because Gears of War is more alive than ever. Gears of War 5.
They should have called it that.
You should have.
Yeah.
Absolutely slapped. That thing was the big shot in the arm I thought the franchise needed. It sold really well. A lot of people liked it.
Yeah.
I reckon it's in a miles better position than Halo was, you know, before Infinite came out. Miles, miles better.
Well, yeah.
It's on top, IMO.
It is. It's better than, Gears 5 versus Halo 5. There's no real comparison.
I'll tell you what as well.
Go on.
Gears is also on the upswing. Gears 4 was all right. Gears 5 improved on it in every way. So, if Gears 6...
But they had the vehicle bits that broke everything.
What do you mean, bro? What do you mean, broke?
Because the whole point of Gears of War is, like, intensity and, you know, going from firefight to firefight and getting lost in, like, a really good gameplay loop. And then they were like, hey, go in this skiff for half an hour. It was horrible.
No, it was... Those open world games...
They didn't do anything with the open world.
They made it so much better, right? I don't like when games go open world or wide linear for no reason, right?
Same.
And I thought it was going to be a mistake for Gears to do that. But then I was proven wrong, because you got the intensity because you were going from one intense firefight to the next.
Yeah.
And then you had those kind of, you know, those slightly shorter moments when you got to appreciate the world and the environmental storytelling in a way that you couldn't in other Gears games. I will stick by this take that in other Gears games, although the mythology is there for the world and how it operates, I never felt like that world existed. I never felt like I was part of a place. I knew I was part of it, but I never felt like it had a history that I was actively involved in. I know it was there in the books and what have you, but in Gears 5... I actually felt for once that I wasn't just an avatar in a world. I felt like I was part of it, and it had things happening around me that I was interested in.
Oh, man, the bit in Gears 1 when you first go underground and you see all the emulsion mines and you see all the, places where all the different, the lambents and all that sort of stuff. I know they brought the lambent in, and maybe that's a Gears 3 thing, but like when you saw the emulsion, you saw that the cave, and you met that giant, the creature whose name I forget, and the thing is the giant squid-looking crustacean thing that was in the trailer that killed Marcus. That was immaculate world-building for me, where it's like, okay, this is where they are coming from, this is what you're invading, and like, I love all that side of it. For me, Gears 5 was just open world 101. For me, they did nothing with the open world. It was like, here's a skiff, it sucks to control, and there's a few little camps that you're going to go to and fight five dudes and then go to the next thing.
Right.
I had no reason why that was open world to me at all.
See, I like that. I want to go back to and hopefully clarify what I meant about the world building. Because I fully agree, like, that was great in the original games. But what I was trying to say really poorly was that I never felt like normal people existed in it. I knew it was a world of, you know, the Lambent and, you know, these big muscly cog soldiers and stuff. But I could never envision normal people having a normal life.
Oh, see, Gears 2, when you open in the hospital and everyone's like trying to, like, you know, take care of patients and do their jobs all around you. Like, I guess that would be my bit for that. But I'll give you it that you didn't feel that at all in Gears 1, because it was just, you were just five kebab-legged men running around shooting stuff.
For whatever reason, this might be a personal failing on my behalf, but when I saw that kind of section in Gears 2, I was just kind of like, they're just set dressing. They're
really
just there to kind of make me feel something. I never felt like they existed as people.
I know exactly what you mean. I just remember thinking that, oh my God, there's other humans. They're like, because they're all regular sized as well.
Yeah.
Because like Marcus and Cole and Ben and Dom are humongous men. Just absolutely humongous. I remember Cliff Bleszinski saying he likes like his main characters to be humongous dudes, but then it's funny because the rest of the world world isn't scaled that way. So you're just like 50 times bigger than the guy next to you, like your whole squad of Master Chiefs all next to them and everything. Yeah, overall, Gears is an incredibly memorable IP. I just feel like for me, the cover shooter boom of the 2000s was where it soared. And for me, it trying to modernize itself with quote unquote modern day open world mechanics, I thought they fell the F down because they didn't do anything with them. It was just here's some encampments, here's whatever. Not to say that the world wasn't gorgeous, like all the red sand stuff in Act 3, I think it's Act 3, and like the ice level and stuff. I thought it had cool visuals. I just didn't care. And then I realized that when they bring the old gang back, I was like, I care so much more about you guys.
Right.
Like, give me like the aging Marcus Fenix. Give me the hug with his son. Have him have those moments. Give me old man with feelings. That's what I want in all my games. Give me toxic masculinity, the 2022 edition.
Hey, I'm absolutely with you there. Like the decision to make the old gang, like the supporting cast, I thought was amazing. To give Marcus a larger role than what he had in four, part of the squad, you know, have that relationship with JD be explored, especially after JD like commits war crimes in like the opening act. Like for me, the absolute gall of that game to be like, look at this guy that everyone thought was bland in Gears 4, and we're going to complicate him and make him dark in a way that makes you really interested in his plight. I just thought, if you taught me, right, I guess this sums it up, if you taught me finishing Gears of War 4 that you're going to come away having more than two thoughts about JD Phoenix, I'd have said, hell no, I'm not.
Well, he started as he started as like a Nolan North, Nathan Drake 101. And then I just thought it was funny how much they put him in the center of like messing everything up.
Yeah.
And then they try and they make him so he dresses like Marcus and he tries to be a hard man and he finds himself later on. But in that bit where you can choose whether to kill him or the other character, I killed him in a heartbeat. I don't want JD in my Gears universe. I don't need JD Phoenix in my life.
See, I mean, I think you probably chose the right decision there, but I couldn't do it to Marcus, man. I couldn't do it to him. Couldn't go back to that poor lad and be like, oh, I accidentally just chose to kill your son.
I am responsible for this.
I am.
But yes, overall, some things happening in the gaming industry, some new things, whether it be Gibbon Games or Evil Dead Games, and some news trickling in left, right, and center while we wait for Summer Games Fests to kick in full. For now, though, this has been The Wind-Up. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.